Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you for an off-season edition. Phil, it's been a few weeks, I guess. I hope we remember how to do this.
Yeah, we're talking about baseball, right? I don't even remember what we do here.
We are going to talk Marquette basketball, of course. But before we get to Marquette basketball, as this is a Marquette basketball show, I do want to give a belated shout-out and congrats to the Marquette University lacrosse team on making the first NCAA tournament in school history. That was great. That happened a few weeks ago. They won the Big East tournament, so that got their first automatic berth. Just fourth year in the program. By the way, the track teams, men's and women's, also won Big East championships.
Hang banners.
Banners everywhere. But lacrosse team, that was especially great, just because new program, don't get much pub. I know they had a great crowd at out of Valley Fields for their NCAA tournament game against North Carolina, but good for Joe Amplo and the program. Happy for them. Just wanted to give them a shout out before we forgot about it, because while this is a basketball show, we do care about all things Marquette, including the fact that they're tearing down McCormick, which I'm totally over.
You're over it or not over it?
It was nice. It was home, and it was dumpy. But it's time to move on.
Well, I just think college kids these days are pampered. How can they live anywhere but that?
It did humble you, didn't it?
It did teach you that you were not quite arrived yet.
I was in an elevator in Los Angeles at the mall, and I thought a few weeks ago, and I thought this elevator was bigger than my freshman dorm at McCormick.
That's true, and it should be noted that podcast probably does not exist were it not for McCormick, where we met.
Yeah, I actually met a lot of great friends in McCormick, including Phil, who I still talk to today, obviously. But yeah, McCormick, great memories. Not a great building. So good luck with that, Marquette. I'm looking forward to the new. I think the new one's going to be built up in time for our 15-year anniversary. Maybe we can, check that out.
Yeah, but the question is, can Marquette fundraise, knock a brick out of McCormick and take it home with you?
I would pay some money. I would donate some money to, take a few swings at McCormick's walls. I think that'd be enjoyable.
Yeah, that would be. And there is apparently a movement underway to get the new dorm named after Father Noss.
Yeah, I would not be against that.
No, I wouldn't.
We've gotten really off topic here. It's a great start to this basketball podcast.
Listen, it's the off season. We got a little bit of ADD.
We have some time to fill, but we do actually have a bunch of topics to get through. We're going to talk about the schedule. We're going to talk about the tournament team, which I find kind of oddly exciting. But first, we're going to talk about the most recent news with Marquette basketball. And that was Marquette was unable to get the two bigs they were targeting with the last scholarship they had available, which will be a topic we get to in a minute. But obviously, Wojo, knowing what the roster looks like over the next two or three years, obviously needed some bigs. He had targeted a couple guys for next year. LG Gill, who was a small forward, power forward from Duquesne. He was a grad transfer.
Would have played one year.
Would have played 1 year. Would have been nice to have. But he decided to go with Maryland. And then Khalif Young, who who's going to be a freshman this fall, 6'9" big man out of Canada. Marquette seemed to be in pretty good standing with him, but Providence got the last visit, and they must have sealed the deal then because he went to Providence. So, neither of these prospects, Phil, were, I would say, program makers or anything like that. But both would have been nice to have just from a depth perspective. But maybe some fans a little more crushed than they should be that Marquette didn't get these guys. But maybe a little bit of concern about the depth in the front court for next year or so.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, in a vacuum, neither of these quote-unquote misses seems all that terrifying. Yeah, we do have a pardon the pun, a shortage in the front court with only Matt Helt and Luke Fisher as people standing taller than 6'6". Wojo even floated the idea in the local newspaper of record that Helt and Fisher would play together, which seems just absolutely insane given Fisher's inability to not foul people.
I think Helt has a foul issue too. Grant, it's small sample size for him, but I don't think you want to go, get both of them in foul trouble or God forbid injured, and then you're playing either Sandy Cohen or Sakar Anum at the five.
Right. Neither one of whom is Lazar Hayward 2.0.
Right. I mean, those guys at the four are interesting enough.
Right. So, I mean, not getting those two players, and let's be fair, they're. All sorts of interesting things can still happen. One of the things that will be interesting with the way the new NBA draft system works, and we talked a little bit in the previous podcast that if you put your name in and pull it out before, I think, tomorrow.
It's May 25th is the deadline.
Oh, May 25th.
Wednesday.
So Wednesday. If you pull your name out before then, you retain your eligibility. And I do wonder if some players who are in a position to be graduate transfers or, you know, take the immediate transfer rule, if some of them don't say, well, I got some good feedback from the NBA, I need to do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to go to a program with time available. Hey, look, Marquette doesn't have anyone taller than 6'6" that's not a center. Maybe I'll go there. Or other transfers or a JUCO. I mean, there's possibilities there, so not all hope is lost, but it is an interesting miss given the roster makeup.
Yeah, actually, Paint Touches did mention that about guys who were in the draft and could pull out and then go to a college as a grad transfer. There are a couple guys out there. Nothing that's really that exciting, probably, but there are a few guys in that realm. So because of the delayed NBA draft deadline now, the rebuilding process for college basketball teams has definitely been extended a little bit. So there will be some guys possibly out there that weren't exactly looking at schools the past month, but now might be. So that will be something to keep an eye on.
Well, other thing that everyone's kind of getting, and when I say everyone, I mean the weird people on the internet regarding Marquette. I mean, if you took Khalif Young and LG Gill in any other year and kind of looked at them, you know, dispassionately, neither one would have elicited a ton of excitement or somebody that you say, oh, we got to get them. I mean, Khalif Young, while would have been good, but he might have been good 2-3 years down the road, not next year. You know, and LG Gill had brought a skill set that maybe helps, maybe doesn't. So it'll be interesting. It just means that we're definitively, unless somebody else comes onto the roster, we're definitively going with essentially a four-guard lineup next year, which at least will be playing a consistent style no matter who's in the game.
Yeah, so there probably aren't that many options left. We're going to talk about some maybe what they're going to do with that last scholarship in here just in a few minutes. But I wouldn't expect any impact of any type. And, like, there are some names out there, but nothing that would draw too much excitement. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Marquette's going to be very guard-oriented. I mean, they did bring in Caton Reinhart, who is a bigger guard from USC. Who knows? In a four-guard lineup, he may be the four, just because he's a little bigger than some of the other guys. Not that he's necessarily a great rebounder, but he's going to have to be. Everyone's going to have to be next year with the way the roster is going to be constructed. But, yeah, I think it was just a bummer from a depth perspective that it would have been nice to have those guys. Even though Young might have been overmatched as a freshman, he could have at least gotten out there, and maybe he surprised you a little bit and could give you 10 or 15 minutes a game that you probably wouldn't have got for someone else. Gill almost certainly would have started at the four and put a brought some leadership, even though he wasn't necessarily an outstanding rebounder, would have been probably better than most of the guards on the roster. Both would have been good to have. I don't think Marquette's projected win total has shifted dramatically either way.
Right.
Like, I don't think they were like a 20-win team with them, and now they're a 13-win team without them or something like that. Maybe they would have won us one or two more games that we would have won otherwise. So catastrophic, no. Bit of a bummer, yeah. But I think I'm kind of over it, to be honest. Wojo will kind of figure out what to do from there.
Well, if you look at the talent coming back, I mean, an argument could be made that if either one of those had been brought on, maybe you make an argument from a size and a style standpoint that they get minutes. But Gill would have, maybe less so, but certainly Young would have been looking to be like the 10th or the 11th best player on the roster, you know, from a, you know, non-empirical standpoint.
But his high school coach says he's going to be a household name this fall.
Oh, the high school coach. I'm sorry. I thought that was his junior high coach. Well, that changes everything.
Yeah, I'm being sorry. Maybe he'll be a nice player, but I think expectations maybe have been a little too high in that regard. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think even, you know, just being tall isn't going to get you on the court.
Right.
And case in point, use Mbow. If height gets you on the court, he would have been a regular contributor. But, yeah, I think just being tall wasn't going to get Young on the court this year. But he probably would have had a shot. He would have had every opportunity to do so. But Yeah, again, he's going to go to Providence, who's going to need him now because Ben Bentel has decided to stay in the draft for Providence, which is, I think, is a good move for him.
Yeah, well, and I guess we'll find out how he develops because we'll see him twice a season now at Providence.
Yeah, we will. So we'll be on the other side with him, and we'll probably never see LG Gill because he went to Maryland unless we see him in the tournament, which I would be very happy with. Now, the thing surrounding this young – and this is the thing that probably made it – seem a little worse than it was regarding not getting Young or Gill, and that was the Wally Ellenson situation, which isn't probably the happiest thing to talk about right now, but I think it is something that's still on people's minds, so I do want to touch on it here in the podcast. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know Wally Ellenson was cut from the basketball team. Marquette could have spun it however they wanted in the press releases. Wally has left the team. Wally's doing track, whatever. You read between the lines and paint touches. Andre over there did a great job just kind of deciphering some tweets and reading the tea leaves that, you know, it is perfectly obvious that this was not Wally's decision. So, again, you can put it however you want.
Have we decided on a nickname for this? Is it a Woj Bomb? Is it a Polax?
Yeah, it was house cleaning before.
Right.
But, you know,
and Buzz Cut.
And buzz cuts after that. But I don't know if I want to go with a nickname for it just yet because this is the first time it happened. But when it comes to cutting players, I think it's kind of a common practice around college basketball. Most times it is spun in a positive way of he has chosen to pursue other opportunities, or we thank him for his contributions, but he has decided to go elsewhere, or and he is yada, yada, yada. With Wally, it was just so obvious that he had been cut and it was not his decision. And because he had already transferred once, he can't go anywhere else for basketball because you can't be on scholarship for 6 years without a hardship waiver. And he has not graduated yet, to my knowledge. Otherwise, I think he would have announced he was graduating and transfer by now.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, because he was doing both track and basketball, I don't think he had the ability to take enough classes to right. graduate so he could apply for the graduate transfer rule.
Yeah, I'm almost certain he hasn't graduated. Otherwise, we know
he hasn't, right?
Right. So, yeah, I like I said, his busy schedule, two track seasons, spring and winter, and then plus basketball. So, yeah, I can't imagine he was taking enough classes to graduate quickly, especially considering he transferred when you transfer, all your credits don't necessarily transfer over from 2 years at Minnesota to 2 years at Marquette. So, but again, back to the point at hand of cutting Wally Ellenson, it just kind of felt different this time with Wally, of course, because no matter what the reality is, the perception certainly is that Wally was brought on just to get Henry on board, and then he was cut after Henry left, which maybe that's fair, maybe that's not, but it was just a bad look for Marquette, and there was a lot of, I don't know, grumbling or disappointment, but it was kind of a bad few days of PR for Marquette there.
Yeah, I think it was some bad PR, but I don't know, we've talked about a little bit off pod, but I don't know if you still stand in the same place, but ultimately I'm while the PR kind of sucked for short term, I think it's a hit you got to take. I mean, look, Wally would have been the 11th or 12th player on the list, on the roster coming back next year. Plus he's, and I fully support his track career, but he's not fully committed to the basketball team. You know, if you're gonna expect a roster spot on a Division I basketball program, the fact that he was able to take conditions and do track full time, whereas basketball was a little bit more part time, that's an unusual circumstance. So he certainly got a lot of leeway previously. And if you're the 12th best player on the roster, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect you to show up for all the practices so you can develop into a player we need to play the four.
Yeah, and I think maybe that was part of the thinking there. The interesting thing to me is that why Wally was cut before Marquette was officially over the limit. Because obviously he could have just kept the 13 guys he had, then after getting Young or Gill, say, all right, now I got to cut somebody. But it was kind of a preemptive strike. It's like, well, we're going to cut him now, and then we're just going to have a scholarship open.
That also presumes that he was cut exclusively because, you know, because they wanted to bring in another player. Who knows? There may have been other contributing factors going on.
Yeah, and to be honest, they were going after Biggs for a while there, and it may have been a situation as soon as they got Caden Reinhart, and, like, that was the guy that really is pushing Wally off the roster.
Yeah, that's correct.
So maybe after they got him, Wojo's like, all right, well, my 11th guard spot has now been taken up, so it's time. I got to move somebody. So he made the move with Wally. And again, I hate to make it like about Wally too much, because Wally, by all accounts, was a great kid and a really likable guy, and well liked around the program and the campus. But like I said, he was the 13th guy on the roster, really. And he's, you know, and even if he was gonna maybe a better basketball player than he showed, he's now played for 3 Division I coaches, and none of them have given him significant minutes. He played for Tubby Smith, he played for Richard Pitino, and he's played for Wojo. And none of them have given him starters' minutes. And maybe part of that is because, yeah, maybe he does have to split his time between track and basketball. Like, he probably misses a lot of – in basketball season, he is pretty committed to basketball, but – off-season workouts and conditioning, you know, he's not at those because, like I said, he's training for track and he's working out with the track team, going to track meets. And that probably takes away from it, maybe hampered his development as a basketball player. But, I mean, guys, it's not like he doesn't have a future in track. I mean, he might make the Olympics this summer. Mm-hmm. And
right. Well, but the other thing about it is I agree with you. In season, he's probably 100% committed. But by the same token, it's not like track, you know, I know it's high jump, but it's an entirely nobody's Fallsburg flopping or whatever it's called on the basketball court, and you know, unless you're getting kicked by Draymond Green. Yeah. Details. You know, but the skill set's not really transferable. So I mean, the other part of it is the roster construction is totally different now than it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I fully believe there's a cynical component to bringing Wally in and saying, hey, Wally, you know, why don't you talk to Henry about how awesome things are and convince Henry to come? Okay, yeah, that component probably is there. But at the same time, when we were looking, when Wojo was trying to bring players in, there was a dearth of any kind of athletic talent on the roster. So taking a flyer on Wally to see if he can perform at a Division I level in basketball and get 10, 15, 20 minutes, that wasn't an issue. And that's why they were able to accommodate his track requirement. The roster composition has changed. We have a lot more talent on the roster. Wally was a lot deeper down. For all we know, Wojo said to Wally, hey, listen, I'm willing to fully commit to you to play basketball if you're willing to fully commit to me. And, you know, you will not miss any practices or training sessions. And, of course, Wally's going to say, no, I have, you know, if you get a chance to do the Olympics, you do the Olympics. I get it. But, you know, there's other factors other than just, you know, the evil, cynical viewpoint a lot seem to take.
Yeah. And the thing is, here's the other side of it. You know, not that Wojo's job is imminently in jeopardy, but it could be after another rough year or two. And his job is to build the best basketball team he can, or else he's not going to be the coach anymore. And so ultimately he could be just, you know, loyal to every kid he brings in, but that could cost him his job if he keeps kids on the roster who aren't contributing. And so as cold-blooded as it is, he does have to make cuts and build the best basketball team he can so he can make a tournament and get some people off of his back and improve this team. So if improving the team means cutting a kid that you like as a person, just don't see a future for as a basketball player, then that's what the coaches have to do sometimes. And that may be a situation here with Wally. He's like, Wally, I like you as a kid, and I know you got Olympic dreams to chase, but I don't see you helping us next year. And so I got to go a different direction. And maybe that, like, I would love to know the whole conversations, like all the conversations, including the first time Wojo called the Ellensons and said, hey, I'm interested in, and did he say Wally or Henry? And then how the conversations went from there, and what Wally was promised or what was understood or what was assumed by both sides. There are a lot of factors at play that we really don't know about as far as the recruiting process, what Wally expected, what the Ellensons expected, what Wojo expected out of Wally in return. But as it is the case with a lot of college basketball players, all you're really promised is 1 year at a time. And then you have these team meetings after the season and you decide, well, is this something we want to keep doing or is it time for us to part ways? And in Wally's case, and again, it sucks because his brother is so high profile and it got a lot of press, and Wally was, and the Ellensons were obviously upset about it. But at least from Wojo's perspective, and it is his team, Wally was not part of next year's team. So he had to make the cut, and I think ultimately Wojo did that because it was best for the team. He thinks Marquette is better next year with Kate and Reinhardt than they are with Wally Ellenson, and he's probably right there.
Right. I mean, Reinhardt's got six times more minutes worth of experience than Wally does, and averages more minutes a game, is a better shooter, actually comparable from a rebounding standpoint. So, yeah, I mean, they're not a direct replacement for each other. But, yeah, I mean, the roster is better. Let's be honest. The roster is better today than it was, you know, 4 months ago. Even though Wally's not on it, and there's
Henry was on the roster 4 months ago.
Yeah, that's
I know right, what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
But and then the other aspect, so we've talked about the cynical bad PR, but the thing that gets overlooked is Marquette could have been, and Wojo could have been really mean about the whole thing, and could have said, "All right, you're cut from the team. Good luck, kid." And he was out of scholarships from basketball. And track tends to give only partial scholarships. Marquette went and created and got Wally Hull. He's got an offer for a full ride on a track scholarship for all of the last school year that Wally needs to attend. So he's still going to get all of his college tuition paid for should he choose to go that route.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. I don't know how exactly that works. Because, like I said, there is a limit on scholarships for track. And most
they tend to give partials, like they
right make... yeah like kid gets a 10% scholarship or a 20% scholarship or whatever. Like if Wally's getting a full, does that mean like six or seven kids on the track team are not getting scholarships?
That's
now?
Correct.
Well, that kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think they were able to carve it out of people that hadn't accepted offers yet. So basically, the track team is taking a hit for the basketball program to keep the Ellensons, you know, allow their kid to go through school without having to pay, which is why I'm saying Marquette's kind of doing the right thing here because
they are taking care of him academically. The bottom line is what they're most pissed about is that Wally doesn't get to play one more season of basketball, which he would have liked to do.
Which is fine, but if he wasn't good enough to get on the court, why are we wasting each other's time here?
I don't know, but obviously it's a huge deal to them because, again, some not so subtle tweets. I mean, they were, as Paint Touch has illustrated, they're pissed about it. I mean, they're really upset about this. So, again, the funny thing is, if Wojo would have waited, Wally might make the Olympic team this summer, leave Marquette anyway because he gets track opportunities, and this would have never been an issue, right?
Right. That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess my whole thing is, why did he have to cut him when he did? You know, he could have just maybe played it out a little longer because, like, if knowing that he didn't get Young or Gill, if we were sitting here today and Wally was on scholarship, like, would Wojo feel a need to make a cut right now?
That's a fair point, but then the question – well, yeah, I mean, that's why I almost wonder if there's not something – I have no idea what, but there's got to be something more because, to your point, if Gill or Young commit, okay, then cut him then.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Why do you make a preemptive strike? I'm just not sure exactly why you cut him before you're over. Cause right now Marquette is one under, but oh, well, that's,
new. Yeah, that's whatever. I mean, it's water under the bridge. He gone. We'll figure it out. Hopefully the Ellensons can find their way back into the Marquette finds their way back into the good.
Yeah. I get the gist spirit. Their only real issue is with Wojo, and I think they still like the university and the track team and the players on the team. I think it's just Ellensons versus Wojo right now. That's
which,
kind of the gist.
You know, if that's the case, fine. So be it.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
I
will want to just touch again. This is a small percentage chance. I'm just going to throw this possibility out there, and it actually transitions into our next topic. I would not 100% rule out some reconciliation towards the end of the year, or end of the summer. And what I say about that, I know Matt Velasquez reported that Wally's status will not change and he's not coming back. But time can heal wounds. If we get to August and say Wally did not make the Olympic team and he's going to attend Marquette, and Marquette's still sitting there with that scholarship, and it's just sitting there open, if they reached out, would Wally say, no, screw you? Or say, you know what, I could, you know, commit to being a rebounder and help the team however I can? Again, I would put it as a 1% chance. I'm putting it as a greater than zero chance that it happens. Not much greater than zero, but again, it's not going to happen this week. But I would say, fast forward to August, that scholarship's still sitting there unused. Wally's going to be on campus anyway. If they find one guy who can maybe push guys in practice a little bit, maybe Wally could commit, commit to being a rebounder, and that's going to be his role. I would, again, greater than zero chance, but not much of a...
And that's fine. I'm willing to say there is zero chance that Wally ends up on the team at any point in time, short of some sort of unknown malaria that attacks the team and we're in desperate need of players. I just don't see it. It would... I mean, going back and bringing Wally back on the team probably makes Wojo look like an idiot, you know, like, because right to the point of why did you cut him in the first place if you couldn't land it? I mean, it just brings everything back up. I just, you know, who knows? Maybe it happens, but I just don't see any scenario where it does.
I guess what I'm saying is maybe they get through summer workouts and Wojo says, holy crap, we don't have a rebounder on this team, you know, and maybe we'll just puts a feeler out there. Again, if you're saying, is it going to happen, yes or no? I would say no, but I would say again, greater than zero chance.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see to your point, Wojo's made an assumption on the pieces he has. I mean, one has to presume, especially with Henry off the team, that the style of play is going to be totally different. I mean, we know we're going to go with a 4-guard lineup. It's going to have to be some sort of team rebounding because nobody is averaging more than 2 rebounds a game remaining on the roster. So somebody's are going to have to step up. So, I mean, to your point, maybe if they go through practice and just it does not look like it's going to work out and Wojo decides that he, you know, made a mistake in terms of player evaluation or what kind of style they play.
I don't think like adding Wally back would necessarily change the win total that much. I mean, it would probably.
I really don't think it would make a difference one way. We'll never know, but I don't think it would make a difference one way.
This like kind of transitions to my next topic. What do you do with the last scholarship? And one of the options is just to stash it and leave it for next year. And I guess maybe that's probably the situation where Wojo would ask, all right, what's more valuable to me, having Wally for the year or having that scholarship available for an unknown mid-season transfer? Because that can be pretty valuable, because I think right now the most likely scenario is them stashing it and using it for next year and bringing in 4 guys for next year, but one of them could be a mid-season transfer, and there are always those. So again, you have no idea who that may be. It would be probably a freshman somewhere who doesn't like where he is and decides I'm transferring, and it's a guy you would add as a sophomore who would be eligible to play as a sophomore next season. So I think maybe in that regard, that would probably be more valuable going forward than having Wally just take the unused 13th scholarship. So
yeah,
I would
Steve
say
Fisher,
stashing
comma,
it.
Luke.
Yeah, that worked out just fine. So I think stashing it is probably the most likely option. The other options are obviously, again, this is another thing Paint Touch has broke down. Look at a grad transfer that's still out there that you probably have no relationship with. Slim pickings, if you really look at it. If you're excited about a guy from middle of nowhere state who averaged 1 point and 1 rebound a game, bring him on just because he's 6'10", all right, but he's probably not going to help you. Add a freshman, probably no impact freshman left. Whoever you bring in would probably be a total project and a guy you would recruit over anyway. And so a guy who would probably transfer next year. So, again, it would just be a roster filler. A traditional transfer, a guy who would sit out next year and then join the team in 2 seasons from now. And I don't know what kind of JUCO transfers are still out there. So, again, the realistic options are a low-level grad transfer, a freshman project, a traditional transfer. There are a handful of those still out there. Junior college player, I have no idea what that situation is, or just stash it for a year.
Yeah, I think they'll probably just stash it for a year in the hopes that there maybe is a midseason transfer that they can grab.
Yeah, because it would be well, obviously that would kind of be the ideal situation, wouldn't it? Is if there's a big man somewhere who is, again, similar to Fisher a couple years ago, who just doesn't like where he is. I made a mistake coming to the school and is looking for somewhere else and transfers that semester, said, boom, we got a scholarship for you. It's unused. You can take it for the rest of this year so you don't have to pay next semester's tuition. Get in the program for a year so you kind of get used to us, and then by the time you take the floor as a sophomore next year, you're ready to go. And that would be very helpful to Matt Helt for sure. So I think stashing it is probably the most likely option. One recent transfer that just hit the market, it just really caught my eye. Just because, one, I've interviewed the kid personally, and two, because I know Marquette was in his final five the first time around, and that's Charles Matthews. He's a guard from Kentucky. He was a top 50 player in the nation. And the only reason I throw this, he's a 6'5 guard, by the way, so I know, oh,
well,
no, another guard.
We don't have any of those.
But thing is, we are losing Juwan Johnson and Caden Reinhart after this year. So, I mean, there will be room for a bigger guard next year, or in 2 years from now, when he would be eligible to play. So, and the thing is, I bring it up, one, he had Marquette in his final five the first time around, and two, I know for a fact he idolizes Dwayne Wade. Like, and Dwayne Wade knows him personally. Like, check out Dwayne Wade's Twitter feed and look for mentions of Charles Matthews. He's tweeted about him on more than one occasion. So there is a relationship there. Not that I don't know if Wade would push him to Marquette or if he'd be interested in Marquette just because Wade went there. But if you're going to look for one big-name transfer on the market, I would not 100% rule out Charles Matthews having interest in Marquette.
Well, is this like Hanif Cheatham knows Drake?
Honestly, it may be similar.
Okay.
Like
well, we're racking them all up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, but like I said, Wade has tweeted about Matthews, like, when he committed to Kentucky. Like, Wade tweeted, congratulations to my brother Charles Matthews going to Kentucky, proud of him. You know, something like that. So, again, there is a relationship there. He's very familiar. He considered Marquette strongly the first time around. Now, that granted, that was Buzz recruiting him that time. But so a lot has changed since then. The coach, the number of guards on the roster, etc. But, again, if you're looking for a big-name transfer out there that would have to sit out a year, I would not 100% rule out Charles Matthews.
And that would well be worth a cut of Wally Ellenson. Would you not agree?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I would. Again, I guess I say the thing about Wally just because I kind of feel bad for him.
I do and I don't.
I feel bad for a kid who is cut from a team when he still wants to be on the team, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but, I mean, when were you cut from your Pee Wee baseball team?
Long time ago.
It happens to everyone. Just some happens at the college level, some happens sixth grade.
Yeah. All right. So, again, I guess that's why I threw that about Wally. But that's just a thought about Matthews. But I think we've kind of concluded the most likely scenario for this last scholarship, just stash it. And if something surprising comes up, Wojo will probably, you know, kick some tires on a few guys and see if something makes sense. I think the most likely scenario is they're going to bring in four new faces next year. Probably three. They're after a lot of freshmen, or a lot of big men in next year's freshman class.
Well, and we have to, because Matt Helt will be the only size on the roster come next year.
So I would imagine the ideal scenario would be to bring in a JUCO or grad transfer next year plus three freshmen, ideally all in the front court. So I kind of think that's what they will do with the last scholarship. But we've been surprised before. Like with what they do with last scholarships, like, oh, added another guard. Who's Dwight Bikes? Oh, he turned out to be a pretty decent player.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm curious to see. I mean, Wojo has seemingly putting a premium on outside shooting, and there's a theory to be had that he's kind of trying, which a lot of college coaches are probably going for. He's trying to go for the Golden State theory of space and pace and do that sort of thing. So I don't know. I mean, you got to have some big men on the roster. They're not obsolete. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, there was a time, like, they were looking at the NBA, look at what Golden State does. Like, big men are dead. And then, you know, Oklahoma City comes in with Steven Adams and Enes Kanter. Maybe big men aren't dead.
Right.
So I think it's good to have size. It's good to have guys who can rebound. Marquette will desperately need them next year. It would be nice to have one more for 16-17, but they'll probably just make do with Fisher and Helt until Cohen and Sekar Annam and Sam Hauser to stretch. Stretch the best you can.
Get that hanging device that Michael Keaton is hanging from in the first Batman movie.
Exactly, and just stretch it out. Everybody just, and again, the old adage that rebounds are about effort and not height, Marquette is going to truly put that to the test over the next couple years here.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. All right, so I think we've touched on the scholarship situation enough. We're going to wrap up with a few other notes here. We do know a little bit more about the schedule right now. I'm sure we'll start seeing more non-conference announcements over the next month or so. But the one thing we do know is that Marquette will not play Utah in a home-and-home the next 2 years, and they will play the University of Georgia the next couple years. So a decent SEC team, a team that's kind of a typical bubble team out of the SEC every year. Not near the top, certainly. That's where Kentucky reigns, but certainly never near the bottom in the SEC either. So I'd say an above-average SEC opponent. Marquette is going to go to Athens this year, so that'll be a nice road game to mix in with the big non-con home game, which, of course, will be against Madison. So Georgia's a decent opponent. I don't hate it. I'm good with that.
Well, one, it's a name, which some of the complaints seem to be more about the names of the teams we're playing than where they stack on the RPI list.
Yeah, I mentioned middle of nowhere state earlier. I think they may be on the schedule again.
I'm certain they are, though. I'm going to have a very significant bone to pick with certain individuals that do the schedule broker. if we have more than two 300 plus RPI teams on the schedule again next year, but Georgia's a good little. It's a road game. They're somewhat rebuilding, you know, so it should be a good challenge for Marquette, but also an opportunity to pick up a road win, and it's a home and home, so we'll get to rematch against them the following year. So with Wisconsin, Georgia, the Sports 2K going on in New York City.
They got Pitt and Michigan in that one.
Yeah, so that's a solid crop of teams, you know, again, from a name and to a certain extent from an RPI standpoint, that's a solid crop of teams to build.
Yeah, I think it's pretty decent. I think don't expect any more big names, any recognizable names to be added to the schedule at this point. I think that's enough. And I think just, again, with the hope is they don't go for the 300 RPI grab bag. For the rest of the schedule, maybe get some in the 200s there. And if you want to play a SWAC team here, maybe one we could tolerate. But beyond that, hopefully it's, again, less in the 300s, maybe some more in the middle 200s, and maybe even get greedy and get somebody in the 190 range or something like that.
Right. But, well, because, I mean, the team is far more experienced going into this next season than they were the previous season.
Yes, inexperience is not an excuse for this team.
Yeah, so you can't build the schedule around...
Height is the excuse this year, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, we've always got one.
Well, everybody needs an excuse, and that would be Marquette's this year. That we were just screwed by Khalif Young.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll the schedule should reflect the fact that we're a more experienced team, and we have to build a resume that allows us to maybe go 10-8 in the Big East and still have an opportunity for the tournament. Because that was, I mean, and we've carried on about it ad nauseum in the podcast for the past season. The schedule was formed such that it just gave Marquette no chance to really be successful. The schedule, at least so far, seems to be shaping up as a good balance between competition and opportunity for Marquette to rack up some wins that will help them come March.
Yeah, it's a good schedule. It's not a holy crap, how are they going to get through this type schedule. It's just a decent schedule, and it's something I think hopefully we'll be satisfied with. Again, as long as they don't just muck it down with a bunch of 300 teams, I think it'll be a fine schedule and something we will be at peace with going forward as we get ready for Big East play.
Yeah, and overall, one of the other things that'll come up is season ticket holders will whine and complain. And as a season ticket holder, I say, don't worry about it, because what's going to end up happening, you've got the Wisconsin home game, and then given the competition in the other road and neutral site games, they'll bring in, you know, seven or eight no minimal name teams. Again, hopefully they're not 300-plus teams, but they'll bring in some no-name teams that a season ticket holder is going to look at their tickets and go, oh, this is terrible. But in the greater scheme of things, that's perfectly acceptable. That's how modern Division I basketball works these days.
Yeah, you got to get to 20 wins somehow.
Right.
You got to get a few.
I mean, look, we got 20 wins this last season and didn't get in. We got to get to 20 wins for sure.
Yeah, we got to get a few layups in there, and so I think I'm cool with that. So again, maybe they'll start rolling out some non-conference stuff over the, you know, some official dates over the next month or so. We'll keep an eye out for that. But speaking of tournaments, and we'll just wrap up on this fun note. If you've been following us all on Twitter, you probably by now know about Marquette has formed an alumni team to enter the tournament. It's called the TBT, the tournament is just the name of it. If you're not familiar with this, it's kind of a fun idea. I don't know who is organizing it, but the bottom line is people, schools, alumni organize these teams, and they're generally broken down into alumni of certain schools, although they are not officially affiliated with any of the schools. And they have a 64-team tournament, and there's a $2 million purse. And the winners basically split all the money. Fans get a little bit. And Marquette has put together a team that is pretty interesting. I mean, NBA players don't play in this. Not that they're not allowed to. It's just there's no reason for them to. But basically what you're getting is a bunch of pros from either the D-League or overseas who, you know, are still in playing shape and just want to try to win, you know, win a little cash. Check out Marquette's team. Pretty decent alumni squad. Maurice Acker, Darius Johnson-Odom, Jarrell McNeil, Jameel Wilson, Trent Lockett, Dwight Burke, and Ox.
Devontae
Gardner is back. So that's a pretty good seven-man team. I don't know if they're going to add anybody else.
And I some think other... Wes Matthews is signed on to coach him, is he not?
He is going to coach. It would be hilarious if, like, they got in the championship and Wes decided to, you know, just rip off the suit and, like, you know what, I'm going to finish this thing.
Go full Harlem Globetrotters.
That would never happen, by the way.
No, I'm pretty sure there's a clause would have a stroke. In a contract somewhere.
Yeah, Mark Cuban would throw a fit. But Wes Matthews is going to coach. Steve Novak is involved. He's a booster. He's trying to get fans involved, get them on there to vote. And Dan Fitzgerald is running it. He's the GM. He said he would play if he had to, like if there were injuries or just guys couldn't make it. But he says he does not want to play. And with this roster, I don't think he would have to, because I think those are seven pretty good players. I mean, when I was thinking about what possible roster Marquette may have, there were a lot of good names to throw out. I guess Vanderblue was certainly jumped to mind. I guess Matt Velasquez mentioned this when he kind of did a write-up on the, like, a lot of guys like Vanderblue, for example, probably would not do this because it conflicts with the NBA Summer League in Las Vegas. And so Vander is a guy who probably with a good summer might have a decent shot to make an NBA team next year after the great D-League season he has. So I guess that's probably why we're not seeing Vanderblue on this roster. But there are some other names out there that I was just curious kind of what they're up to, what kind of playing shape they're in. Like if Dominique James was out there.
Lazar Hayward.
Yeah, I'm surprised Lazar isn't on this list,
actually. Yeah, because he's not even in the D-League anymore, is he?
He actually joined he was in the D-League late last year. He was on Vander's team.
That's right.
But I think Lazar would be a great addition to this team. I'd be talking championship if they added Lazar. I know Joe Chapman played in England for a while there. I'm not sure what he's doing right now. Junior Cadugan has been playing. Juan Anderson, I think, wasn't he playing somewhere?
Yeah, I don't
recently?
Remember
Matt Carlino was in the D-League. So I think there's some guys. I wouldn't surprise me if they expanded this roster to maybe 8 or 9, but it's kind of a situation the more guys are on the roster, the more they have to split the money, so maybe they may just go with just this 7. But I'd be curious if they add 1 or 2 more guys to the roster before the thing starts. But this is the last week to vote on it, so you can check it out. We'll post a link after we post the podcast. But I don't know about you, Phil. Considering Marquette hasn't been in the real tournament in a few years, I'm actually really excited for this thing.
Listen, any postseason play at this point is something I will gravitate to, even if it's a made-up tournament that results in other people getting money. I'm a big fan of this.
You're a fan and you get enough people to sign up, you get some money. So get a bunch of your friends to all sign up per your link. Just don't pass me in the standings because I want my cash too. But but yeah, like I think like the top fan recruiter gets like, I don't know, like something like $20,000, and there's like breaks down like 10,000, 4,000, 1,000. Like the top 100 fans all get a little bit of money if your team wins. So A lot of people are kind of like placing their bets here, and you know, basically all you're going to get in return is probably a bunch of spam emails. So you know, sign up with your junk email account,
but your AOL.com account.
Yes, yeah. I still got a Net Zero account I use for just such an emergency. So it's a perfect opportunity to use that. But hey, I think it's a pretty good team because you got a really good point guard in Acker. You got scores on the perimeter in DJO and Jarrell. And I think you got a couple versatile forwards in Jamil and Trent, and then you got your big guys. Dwight Burke is a very good big man, and of course Devontae Gardner was. I think this kind of play. Hopefully it won't be officiated too tightly, because if so, that just plays right into Ox's hands, doesn't it? And he'll just bully his way on the block all day. I think this could be just the perfect setup for Devontae Gardner.
Well, and you know what? This is mostly kidding, but you know, with some of these players, you almost wonder would there be any D-League or NBA or international team scouting these types of games depending on the matchup.
Maybe international teams might have an eye on it. They might be curious.
You know, it's more game tape, right?
Yeah, it's more game tape. And they're playing for money, so right. You know they're giving it all hard. They have. This is not a pickup game. I mean,
we're not going to see Ox loafing back on defense, I don't think.
Oh, no. He's going to be running down there like there's money on the other end because there kind of is. So these guys are going to be hustling. I don't know if these games are going to be televised or maybe they'll be like streamed somewhere. So just keep an eye on that. Again, we'll post a link after we post the podcast. But kind of a fun idea. Just kind of whet your appetite in this long, otherwise boring offseason of college basketball. But I think that'll be kind of fun to watch. And
yeah, I agree. I'm excited.
Yeah, I do hope they add a couple. I would love to see Dominic James back out there because, again, I don't know what he's necessarily doing right now, what kind of playing shape he's in. But I bet he's in fine shape, and hopefully he can get out. I'd love to see him or maybe a couple other guys from Ghost of Christmas Past.
Well,
it
would be maybe not in a playing way, but we'd get the three amigos back together in Wesley, DJ,
yeah, that would,
and
yeah,
Jarrell.
With Wesley coaching and Jarrell and Dominique. That'd be awesome. And, of course, Dwight Burke was a senior that year as well, so then like all four of them would be reunited. But
well, and think about it, the opportunities lost, because those teams were a couple of really good teams that were injuries or a rough bounce away from making deep runs in the tournament. So, hey, maybe they can...
It sounds like something they can make a movie out of, Phil. Let's start production on this thing right
good.
Now.
Let's call Weinstein right away.
Yeah, I'll get my camera. I'll get up there, and you know, we'll just shoot the 30 for 30.
Do
on
you think
this
Ray
right
Allen's
now.
Available?
I don't know. Yeah, we'll get him out there. We'll get Jesus Shuttlesworth out there as well.
I was hoping you got the reference.
Yeah, it took me a second. I'm like, wait, he didn't go to Marquette. Took me a second. Got it. I'm good. Jesus Shuttlesworth. All right, on that happy and awkward note, we're going to wrap up this podcast. Again, we thank you for listening. We welcome your feedback, your comments on some of my dumb thoughts regarding the last scholarship. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-F-23. Crack Sidewalks is the team page. Post your comments, your thoughts on cracksidewalks.com, where we post the podcast. You can always review us, leave your thoughts. We're on iTunes, so you can download us there, take us wherever you go. We also have a Facebook page where we post the podcast as well. Phil, I don't know when we're going to do another podcast. Who knows how long it may be. Hopefully there's not enough breaking news to warrant one for a while, but if there is, we will be here to break it down very poorly.
Yes, that pod signal can go up at any time, and we can show up unprepared and half-assed.
And then we'll delay it for 2 weeks until we finally get it up, and then you'll listen and say, well, that was worthless.
You're really building up the audience here, Joe.
Well, I've got him at the end of the podcast, so it's too late now. But until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons. Enjoy your summer.